So welcome to, good morning and welcome to our session. It's great to see everybody here. When I submitted my abstract for this presentation, I had something kind of different in mind of what I'd be presenting, because in between December and now, some things happened that changed what I'm going to be presenting. But we'll be talking about how we've been trying to develop an indicator on alcohol and other drug hospitalizations over the last few years. So as an outline to this presentation, what was the impetus for trying to develop this indicator? And then I want to go through the decision-making process. We had representatives from many states and CDC and sometimes SAMHSA. Talk about the limitations and challenges in trying to develop this indicator, and look at the results, the products and results of our process, and then what is going on right now. So first of all, to develop an indicator, it has to be an important public health issue. So as everybody in here is well aware probably, I mean, alcohol has been known to be an important issue for a long time. And then in the 2000s, drug poisonings kind of exploded on the scene in various forms. So it's obviously an important public health issue. And there were standard measures for mortality, but there wasn't any standard measure for alcohol and other drug hospitalizations. There were a variety of measures, but for example, the ISW-7, Safe States puts on, was looking at poisonings, but that actually hadn't come to fruition by the time we started in 2010. And in practical terms, the CST Substance Abuse Subcommittee was the actual physical impetus for getting us moving on this process. So that's demonstrated in this next slide. And so I don't have anybody in mind there. It could be Mike Landon of the Substance Abuse Committee. But anyway, so there we are on the right, a group of hearty souls. And they said, okay, so go ahead and develop this indicator and I'll call it drug hospitalizations. And we're, of course, no problem. We're into it. We'll do this. And, of course, we're thinking this will take us 6 months. No problem. We're a bunch of smart people. We can get it done. Anyway, more of a word about indicators. So an indicator, I'm sure at this point everybody's familiar with indicators, but so they need to be meaningful and understandable. You don't want an indicator you don't understand what it means just by looking at it. If you say occupational mortality, that's pretty clear what that is. So you want to have something that means something. And then also in general, when you develop indicators, it should be something that most states can do. This is something where I've been working in occupational health. That's what we've been doing, is we won't develop an indicator unless more than 25 states can generate it. And also it should be pretty easy to generate. You don't want something that's so complex that you're not even sure if people are doing it right. So in talking about the process, we would have monthly meetings, monthly conference calls for the most part. So once in a while we'd skip them. And then for each decision we made, we had to list our justification for that decision. And then one methodology that seemed to make sense to me anyway was to get momentum going. We would start from decisions that were easiest, the low-hanging fruit, and work our way to the hardest ones. So in terms of what I would consider the easiest, we're talking about hospitalizations here, so there can be different time frames. People have calendar years, you can have fiscal years, you can talk about admission dates, you can talk discharge dates. So that was the easiest for that. Most people get their discharge data by the date of discharge, so we use calendar year of discharge for our time frame. In terms of the most difficult, obviously, in terms of the specific diagnostic codes that were going to represent alcohol and other drug hospitalizations, that was where we got stuck, slowed down anyway. So some of the components of the definition, not all of them. So we're talking about acute care hospitals in-state only. So in Michigan, we have access to out-of-state hospitalizations to Michigan residents. But a lot of states don't have that. So going back to most states need to be able to do this. So we included only in-state hospitals. And we only want acute care hospitals also. What we want to do is get at acute events, not necessarily everybody who has an alcohol condition. or a drug condition. In all ages, there was no truncating of the age limit, and only state residents. And here was one of the places where we got a little bit of a lot of discussion. She was mentioning in the first presentation about what a principal diagnosis is and what secondary diagnoses are. We wanted to go mainly with the primary diagnosis and also the highest ranking E code, because we felt those were the reason the person was actually in the hospital. So it's less of a prevalence and more of an incidence type measure. So we first focused on alcohol component, and there we decided to lean on the CDC's RD, the alcohol-related disease impact, because they'd already determined for mortality anyway what conditions were considered 100% attributable to alcohol. So we basically took those conditions and selected them for our hospitalizations, and here's what they are, and you can see this isn't like an exhaustive list, but this captures most of them. In terms of the other drugs that we had, this is where we went from a slow walk to like a stall, because this was very difficult. A lot of studies had come up with their definitions for other drugs, and ISW7, in the midstream of us doing our process, had come up with drug poisonings. But drug poisonings include like vaccines and antibiotics and the therapeutic use of drugs, basically. That's not what our group felt was going to be of most interest. So we evolved to the point we got to drugs with the potential for abuse and dependence, and that actually had to, we had to work our way down to the, this was Steve Wirtz of California was in charge of this. So codes for drug attributable hospitalizations were selected from codes published in previous studies on the basis of conditions listed in Diagnostic and Statistical Manual 4 and 5, or from guidance about drug abuse potential from the Food and Drug Administration, and it goes on, but it was basically, we had to have justification for selecting these drugs. It wasn't like one member thought, oh, we really need to include this, because there's a lot of disagreement in the group. There had to be a clear justification for it. So these are the diagnoses that we selected. So you can see dependence and abuse is listed there. There has drug use related to pregnancy is involved, and then there's poisoning codes. So in terms of limitations and challenges we face, so hospital discharge data systems vary across states, which made it complicated to try to form this definition. So some actually include, say, observation stays, and others don't, so we had to figure out what to do there. Also, again, with the idea of principal diagnosis versus any diagnosis, we had to figure that out. And then again, which diagnostics codes and e-codes to include. We eventually came up with a how-to guide, step-by-step instructions for how to generate the indicator. And that included a link to a spreadsheet that you could do age adjusting, and then also generic SAS programming. And then we drafted an article to be submitted to MMWR, I think it was back in last September or so. Eight states contributed data for 2012, and we wrote an article and sent it to CDC for their clearance. So this is one slide of the eight states, and it looks perhaps a little busy, but here are the eight states. Each bar represents an age group. So you can see here the youngest, very youngest, 0 to 14, and this is for alcohol and other drugs overall. It gets the hospitalization rate increases all the way to the 45 to 54-year-olds. And so it's either the 45 to 54-year-olds are the highest risk for every state. The second leading age group kind of varied. But one thing I noticed is very interesting here is Washington State has kind of like, think of them as hunched up shoulders almost there, because most people have like this peak, but they have something going on there with their 15 to 24 year olds. It turns out that was due to other drugs when I looked into that. So the median rate of all the states for alcohol hospitalizations was 86.2 versus 64.2 for other drugs. And then what was seen also in the first presentation the male-female ratio for alcohol was 2.5 to 1. That was almost exactly what she was showing. For other drugs, males and females were fairly equal. And then the highest age group for alcohol was that same 45 to 54 year olds. For other drugs, it was a younger age group. So where we are right now, so we got feedback. I mentioned that we sent it to CDC for their clearance. We got some feedback, which I wasn't anticipating. And so one of the suggestions, well, first of all, one of the suggestions was don't send us into MMWR. They prefer to have established measures, and ours really wasn't established, even though they do like that multi-state effort thing. Another one of their comments was to separate alcohol and other drugs, because they're kind of, even though they are combined conceptually, in terms of prevention, levels of prevention right now, they're on different historic levels. Alcohol has a long history, other drugs may be in a different spot. So what our group is doing right now is deciding to focus on other drugs alone and just make an indicator on that, and then identify certain sub-indicators within that, say opiate hospitalizations. And then eventually we're going to upload this how-to guide, and then say what, and states could submit their data to CSTE, and then eventually submit to a journal again, give it another try. You have to have, we were talking about this in that round table yesterday about publishing, and one thing you have to learn is you have to keep trying. I mean, you can't just give up after, you know, you don't get the first one. Just like to acknowledge, a lot of these people are in the room, and actually some people I don't have listed here did participate, but these are the main folks, and also Len Closey and Bob Brewer from CDC. So thank you very much for listening. I mean, I could let you know what they are. I do have everything was sort of almost done, and then it kind of got knocked back. I mean, I can let you let you know what we have.
And great, and also, transitioning to ICD-10, having
that was going to be our next step. Was once we got this done, we were going to, the very next step for this group was to figure out which ICD-10 codes would closely correlate with ICD-9 so that there would not be a split. And, well, there's going to be no matter what, probably, but as close as possible. But we haven't done that yet. Yeah?
Hi. You said that you were able to get data for out-of-state hospitalizations by residents, and you said not every state can do that. I was wondering what the process was for getting that data.
Okay, so I said Michigan and maybe other states. I mean, I'm in Michigan, so I know we get Michigan residents in, you know, contiguous states, and then there's other ones too. And then there's other states that don't have that ability. So that's what I said. I'm not quite sure what your question is, though.
Oh, my question was, what's the process in place that you can get that data from?
Oh, you want to know in Michigan what we do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That probably goes before my time there, but I'm sure the person in the vital, okay, so that's actually the Michigan Health and Hospital Association does that. So I'm sure they must have reached out to these other states and developed a collaboration where, you know, we give them Ohio residents and they'll give us Michigan residents. But that was, Sarah, do you know the answer to that? Sorry.
That's in a nutshell, is that the hospital association has worked out arrangements with hospitals in contiguous areas. So things like Detroit and or the far western part of the UP or South Bend, those kind of places where you know you have people going back and forth. So it's not like we get, you know, every time a citizen of Michigan has been hospitalized somewhere else in the nation, but for those contiguous areas, we get that information.
Yeah, so what state are you from?
I am from Massachusetts, but I used to live in Michigan.
Oh, good. Yeah, right. Yes. If I'm only getting state residents, am I doing what?
Aren't you underestimating the 18 to 24 year olds who do a lot of out of state college students?
Okay, so I think I can hear your question. So the 18 to 24-year-old, if we're looking only at state residents, so you're saying a lot of, say, Michigan residents going to school out of state?
No, but...
I can't hear your question.
On both sides.
Yeah, so when you have, like, a large... in a student population within the state, university population, who wind up in hospitals and emergency departments, are they counted because they're not residents?
Oh, I see. Yeah, so that goes into, yeah, I mean, clearly, you that just falls in the category of you can't create the perfect thing here. I mean, you could, to get at what you're saying, you would just simply say hospitalizations regardless of residence.
Right.
So, yeah, you're right.
But how do you define residency? Because if it's just their current address,
in our data set, it's the billing address. It's wherever the bill goes.
Okay.
Plus, if you do that, you get an impossible denominator.
Yeah.
Like, what would you couldn't ever do a rate because
you
it's hypothetical. It's like a hypothetical population of people who may live in your state. I won't give them my time. So you have to just cut that off and say just date.
Yeah, but you could. I mean, it was an interesting point. You could look at them just hospitalizations overall, just to see what that population looks like, regardless. So it's a good point. Yeah.
I'm not very familiar with hospital discharge data sets. How timely are they?
Not. Okay, so in Michigan, you have to consider, like in Michigan, we've got about 130 hospitals, so it's like herding cats probably for them to get them all in there, and then you really have to, the data has to be cleaned. So by the time you have an annual set of data, it might be 9 months or 12 months following the end of the year. So potentially you're almost talking 2 years from those January discharges. So it's, but they do, you can get preliminary, like quarterly data that might be a lot messier, but you can get at it, and it's still going to be probably 6 months, something like that. I don't know what your definition of timely is, but.
I work in syndromic surveillance, so it's 24 hours.
Yeah.
But our data are really messy.
Yeah, so okay.
Yeah,
Dick.
Yeah, we've actually been testing that in syndromic surveillance in Oregon, and it is messy. That's part of the challenge. You have the John Hopkins interface to do that versus moving up to a SAS code and trying to pull it out. You have to unduplicate, deduplicate the unique person you need to get. So hospitals are just feeding you multiple records.
Right.
It's a great system, but we're still figuring out how to do
that for everything.
How am I doing
that time?
Oh my gosh, there's another question over here. Oh, go ahead.
This is more of a process question in the sense for the work group. You said that you guys started and you had 6 months. You thought you'd be able to get
that we didn't have 6 months. We had I would think most of the people in that were in the group, they would probably agree that we thought it would take about, maybe that's an exaggeration, but something like that. Yeah.
Okay, so 6 months, you thought it'd take 6 months, and then where are you at in the sense of have you finalized everything, and how long has it been? Has this process been
going? Okay, so maybe I skipped, but we started in December of 2010. So if you can do the math, on that, and the process, where we are right now is, that's a good question. I think we're at the point where we're honing down on one component of the indicator, and then we're going to. Like I said, we're going to put what we finally developed and can be agreed on the CSE's website, and people can and use the how-to guide to generate data, and like a lot of the indicators are done at CSTE. And then, yes, ultimately we're going to publish something.
If I may just add, put it in perspective, at the same time, the alcohol subcommittee also started a similar project. It all stemmed from the 2010 CSC conference. We had a round table, we were all charged with a project to create, and we all went to our own little ways to do it. So the alcohol subcommittee started with about the same time with similar projects about alcohol attributable deaths and years of potential life loss among 11 states participating in the project, bringing new data, fresh data that the CDC doesn't have from 2006 to 2010. And from start to finish, it was published in this March of 2014. So it also took time from inception to publication. Just to put it in perspective, it's not extremely long compared to another project was about as long. But that's a little bit more complex because it's starting something from fresh. Versus the other project was a little bit more already based on existing indicators.